Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artifact Podcast, Episode 1. My name is SunsFan, joined by the beautiful Sir Action Slacks and Conrad. Hello, friends. How are you?
Good. I thought the Artifact Podcast was just a placeholder name. Is that actually the name of the podcast? It's not very creative.
That's actually the point. So I was thinking a couple weeks ago, everybody's trying to come up with these cool names. I've been trying to come up with cool names for not only this podcast, but other shows throughout my entire life. And I came up with Digital Chaos. So I figured it would be best if we just kept it super basic. What do you think, Conrad? Do you like it?
I think that's a decent play for you. You know, I think once we get to some of the more complicated things, you might be running into a little more issues there.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So we are going to be talking a little bit about Artifact. We want to do this podcast pretty regularly, but the first episode, you might see a little bit of a lag time afterwards because obviously the game is not out yet and there's not a whole lot we can actually say. So stay tuned for the eventual normal amount of episodes that a podcast will have. Excellent. So first things first, before we get started, guys, I don't know if you know about this, but right now, if you go on the Artifaction GG social media, which you can find below, we are giving a bunch of artifact keys out. So check it out. Do your due diligence and get your keys because they're very, very rare. And there's actually, Slacks doesn't know about this next one, which I'm looking forward to seeing his reaction. There's another contest that we haven't announced quite yet. It's going to be up in a couple days. You guys will actually create your own custom hero cards, submit it to us. Slacks will pick one and I will pick one. And those two people will get artifact keys as well. What do you think, Slime?
Ooh, I like that. I thought this was going to be something stupid, but that actually sounds great. That sounds like a lot of fun. Do they have to make up their own heroes, or are they trying to guess what the new heroes that aren't in artifact yet?
They can do whatever they want. I was hoping that they would just pick Dota heroes and just build skills around them. I think that would be super cool, because we talked about how we want to see certain heroes in the game, and everybody has a different opinion, like, Connor, I know we talked about Pudge, for example, that we won in the game. And there's a lot of different things you can do. So art does not matter. Don't worry about your artistic skill.
Well, a Microsoft Paint would sell it on mine, I will say. But that's cool. You don't have to do Dota Heroes. You could have, like, Tusk's mom. That could be a card.
Slacks could be a hero.
Do you have the lore around that? Or
Tusk's mom.
Yeah.
She taught him how to punch by punching him.
So that's dark.
Is that dark?
That's quite dark
just
indeed.
His mom. At least it wasn't his dad.
Anywho, this is a great start to the first set. Conrad, are you happy to be with us today?
I made a huge mistake, guys.
Take it easy. I'm just warming up. Sorry, it's been a long time since I podcasted. I've got to get back into it.
The first part of this podcast, I just want to talk about PAX, which we've kind of talked to death, so I don't want to take too long. But we get to see different opinions here or different perspectives, because you and I were kind of stuck in the casting booth a lot of time talking to some fans. Connor actually got to go through the gauntlet itself, so I want to hear more about that. Actually, let's take us through your perspective first, Conrad, because I haven't really heard the whole thing.
Well, the real start to the gauntlet is actually the line. So yes. If you don't show up at 10 a.m., which I actually did on one of the days, I still had to wait 2-3 hours before I actually made it to the gameplay itself. It was definitely one of the busiest booths at PAX. I was there for work, and I was just going through kind of everything, but by far the biggest line was definitely Artifact. So it was interesting to see so many people interested into it, and they were really excited. Everybody I spoke to was like really, really wanted to play. And I think the other interesting thing is that day, it was about the third day, I think, of the event, we saw a lot of people actually, repeat people, people coming back and people trying it more and more.
Can I just say, what's wrong with those guys? I saw one guy come every single day, and he said he got there at 5 a.m. and he got in at 10. Can you imagine? How long was the event? 4 days?
Yep,
4 days.
Can you imagine spending literally almost an entire day standing in line? I don't give a shit if they were giving out naked artifact people and like solid gold beta keys. I ain't waiting 5 hours for shit. What a dedicated boy.
What is a naked artifact person constitute?
You know, just a naked person like
Debbie?
Covered in beta keys.
Is that
Debbie?
Like you or like, do I get you with
Could've
this?
Could have been.
I do think the one thing that Valve did really well is they did provide a lot of value, I think, for the people that were going through. You know, you get two beta keys, which will unlock the full game when it comes out, both $20 each, as well as a t-shirt, some art prints, the pins. I thought
that lanyard. Was one of the
most... Oh, lanyard?
Lanyard's legit.
And the bag itself, of course.
The bag?
Yeah.
Nah, I was actually, I've never seen a line like that before. On the last couple days, Valve was giving them pizza and sandwiches and waters and shit. I'm like, what kind of line is this? They're treating like goddamn royalty over here.
Yeah, it's pretty legit.
Yeah, man.
All right, so anyway, you waited in line all that time, and then what's the normal process after the, like, what was the longest wait you had, personally? Because I know you technically had a press pass, so you weren't necessarily at the... Really?
I had an exhibitor pass, which proved to be you shake your head, but it actually cost me more time. So what Valve did, and something that I totally understand and I actually appreciate that they're caring for, is that if you had an exhibitor pass, attendee passes actually got into the line before you, because they wanted people who are here for the event to have first access to it. So a lot of other booths actually open up before the event floor does, and let, you know, so many other exhibitors end up playing throughout the, you know, their game and their other things. But Valve really focused on the fans in that scene. So I got kind of lucky. I mean, I waited at 10 a.m. They started letting those attendees through. I'm just standing there, like, seeing 100 people get in front of me, and I'm like,
oh, no.
Hope I get in. And I actually didn't get in originally. And what happened was they actually pushed the people in front of me, like, forward, you know, like, kind of close the lineup as much as possible, and I was able to squeeze in at the very end, the enforcer to video.
My goodness. So you didn't cheat the system, is what you're saying.
I'm not a cheater. I try not to cheat. The first day, I should have. I mean, you know, I have the homies in the booth, but I didn't see anybody helping me out there. But no, it was good. And so once you get through, you get to the front of the line, somebody comes and picks you up. I think there was a mixture of volunteers and Valve employees, which was kind of cool. And they took you to a setup. I think there was about 50 or 60-ish setups, which was really interesting. I think most kind of people that are doing things at PAX are, you know, running much smaller scale, much shorter time. You sit down at your computer. You play a AI game, which the person ends up teaching you. Mm-hmm. I deferred on the teaching aspect, but I
why?
Is that cocky
to be taught?
Maybe the game's kind of easy. I don't know.
Damn.
No, I kid. I mean, I have experience with the game. Is the easiest thing I can say, I guess. And I watched a lot in the first day.
Oh.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yes.
All right, so you went through the AI, then you went through the player versus player, and then who did you play against as your champion?
Yeah, so I was able to make it up to the stage, and I played against Jake.
We did? I don't even recall this.
I guess it's all a blur. I wouldn't recall my losses either, so...
Damn.
Well, of course, we do have to keep in mind that the champions did play with a major handicap. Not just brain-related in Slax's case, but also 30 HP towers, and your deck is randomed, and it can't be a mirror match.
Yeah, so I ended up picking the green-black deck, which is the Econ ramp, which I felt like gave me the strongest chance to win against any of the champions, who I all know. I knew all four of you, and I kind of had a good idea of like kind of how things were going to play out. So I picked Slax because, you know, trying to pick the easiest matchup first.
Yeah, you would.
How did
I felt like I did get some lucky draws in that game, and Jake got, I think, a very difficult deck to play with.
Yes, the blue black aggro, which was less aggro than two of the other three decks, I think, personally.
Some of the control decks were pretty.
You know, we talked a mad shit about that blue black deck, but I was starting to get used to it by the end. I was starting to kind of figure it out, you know? All you need is, I don't know, it's all about setting up that Zeus ult.
Yeah, setting up a Zeus ult, and I think as well as kind of tricking somebody out of a lane. You know, your heroes end up dying with that deck quite a bit. You know, if you're able to kind of get yourself further out, and, you know, maybe they've given up one of the lanes, or they only are able to put one hero there, you can smash down a tower in 80 pretty quick if they don't have any good answers for you.
Indeed.
Slax, what did you think of the handicap? I never heard it from you.
I got it. I thought it was okay. An okay idea. I mean, we would have just smashed. I know I would have smashed if I had that extra 10 damage on every tower. I mean, honestly, a game like Artifact, it's balanced because you know that if I don't win this turn, he's going to win that turn. And that's how you know that a game's good. And the fact that we got to that situation so many times when we started with 30 HP, that to me means, okay, if I had a full 40, we would have had a very low win rate. Of course, I did like to have a little bit of fun with the people too. So there was a lot of moments where it could have been an easy win, and then I just decided to shoot my own Debbie and see what happens. So
yeah, I thought it was very hard, actually. You had to think, because we're used to playing this game for a long time now, but you had to actually just play completely different than you're used to. Like, I was giving up lanes. Like, sometimes I give up a lane, like, you know, a couple rounds in, just for a couple rounds, and go back and try to salvage it a bit. This one, I would never go back to that lane the rest of the game. And I just hope that they expended two heroes to that lane. And if they did, then I had a really good chance of actually winning. So it's just a different play style. And, you know, I think the blue-black was very difficult because you get punished extremely hard by doing that. And for that deck, you have to go, like, all in on one lane a lot of the time. So it brought us some challenge. Like, my estimation, if I played without the handicap, there's maybe one game I still would have lost, honestly, because I made a horrible mistake. It was just a terrible misplay. But the rest, it felt like if I had just one extra lane or one extra turn, I would have definitely won. So it was an interesting experience for sure.
I think that's one of the interesting things about Artifact too, is that, you know, there's things that are definitely in your mind misplays, but, you know, you could misplay two turns before that could cause you to lose 4 or 5 turns afterwards, right?
And, right.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel like a misplay when you're doing that action, and then suddenly it changes the whole course of the game based on a couple cards they get or otherwise.
May I talk about something? For the first time, watching a lot of games, being a spectator on that, and like watching other people's moves, very interesting. I think it helps you become a better player because it's kind of, you get to kind of get that flow from two people's side. That's something I never done in Artifact before. I wasn't like observing games or anything, just kind of looked at the results for games like that. And it's kind of cool to think, you think a lot more about, okay, what could they have? What is their plan? What's going through their head? Whereas before I just played my hand and that's it. So learned a lot. I guess that's what real card players do, but I don't give a shit. Again, I've never played a card game before Artifact, so didn't really plan to. Card games.
And I think one interesting, this is just a random tidbit, but from a talent perspective, like any event that I've been to, like I'll cast a game of Dota or I'll be on panel or something, and then I kind of just sit off, and sometimes I'll watch the games if I need to. Other times I might just take some time off and relax. For this one, I was literally watching the entire day. Like, I'm done with panel or I'm done playing, I'm standing next to one of the computers watching that game, because it's so interesting to see not only how, you know, just the game being played in real time, because we don't get to see that as often, but also how newer players react to situations. Because it's been months since I've been a new player, quote unquote, right? So it's interesting to see a different perspective on how the game flows in their mind, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, everybody has, even on the top level, I think a lot of people are thinking the game very different, you know? I think I was watching a game with Lumi and Flosh, and everybody had a different idea of how that turn should have gone just in that one lane, you know, and as you kind of look at things kind of moving forward, and, oh, I should have played that in turn or in the third lane, or I should have played that in the middle lane. And it really changes the way you're thinking about things.
All right.
Indeed, indeed.
So tell me what you guys thought were the best cards or your favorite cards from those PAX decks, and maybe surprise cards or heroes or anything that maybe you thought was bad that's good, or vice versa.
I always thought the Mercenary Exiles was a piece of shit card. It was always garbage, in my opinion. Why would you pay these stupid assholes to go in there all that money? I mean, money's always been this hard thing for me in Artifact, right? I don't have all my decks, they only have the 325 gold. I don't have anything else in them, because if you just make that, you win the game. So I don't spend money on anything. And then I got to see the strength of those guys. For one, I didn't know the gold added to the Mercenary Exiles. I thought every time you used it, it just reset them. So that was a good learn. Apparently, you can just make them good.
Okay.
But yeah, I learned that though, that card's okay. Still not going to be in any of my decks. I ain't paying nobody for my shit, okay?
Goodness.
I don't know, man. When those cards can become, you know, stronger than heroes, feels pretty good. You know, killing a Bristleback in one turn with a 3 mana card and a little bit of gold added to it.
A little bit. That's a lot of gold, dude.
I mean, it's like 20, 25 gold.
Yes! That means you could add a Thunder Tide Horn.
Right, but I mean, you're Thunder Tide
Horn.
Right?
You keep calling it Thunder Tide Horn. I don't know why. Why do you keep doing this?
I'm not good with the names yet. I'm sorry. I'm not good with Dota names. I've been playing that game for like, what, 6 years now?
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's true.
Clearly, I'm not going to be good with artifact names.
I think one of mine, and I'll need help with the pronunciation, Jake. I just call it the Vandal. But
Oglody?
Oglody. That's how you pronounce
Oglody?
It.
Oglody?
You didn't think that was good before?
I thought it was good before, but I thought I really got to see the power in these aggro decks.
Right.
A lot strong. It felt really, really strong. Oh, you could potentially get 8 damage for four mana. Like what a value card, I feel.
You ever ended a game with that rock, that feel? They have a 4 HP and it
I ended up killing Elaine with that in one of my games. It felt so good.
Oh baby.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sons, what do you got?
I'm a little bit embarrassing. I need to upgrade the program that I'm using to be able to record this. So I will talk about my cards and you guys take over while I purchase the upgrade to be able to continue this call. First of all, I thought it's whatever.
I'm sorry, what?
Forget about what I'm talking about. But Crystal Maiden, I thought was, I saw the potential before and her stats are so bad, right? It's painfully bad. But I found a lot of situations where I could have done way better if I had just been used to getting that 2 extra mana, because it's actually huge in a lot of scenarios. I love Debbie. I always like Debbie, but I think she's definitely the best of the creep heroes. And a couple cards that I thought were, maybe I didn't think they weren't bad, but I didn't think they were great either. Clear the Deck was really, really good. I will probably start putting that in my normal decks now in some respects.
Take it easy.
Divine Purpose was much better than I thought. Like originally when you look at Divine Purpose, like, oh, it's OP, but then you play with it and it's just it's okay. It's not that great, but it's okay.
I don't like that card still. I don't know.
You still don't? Yeah. It could have been from the limited.
Changed on that one. I thought it was good and now I'm like I don't know.
I feel like you get so many other cards at that mana level that it provides so much more value. You know, sure it's invincible, but you know, there's Hand of God that Chen had. That felt better on turn 7 than, or the 7 mana turn than that one, personally.
Okay. Fair enough.
I will say, though, I think the only good application of that card is putting it on a one of those little creep guys that swaps with everybody. What's that little
Rebel Decoy?
Hope this works. Yeah, the decoy. Yeah, decoy. That's the only good time that I've ever felt like that card was great. Put it on a decoy, and every time they try to do damage, just swapping out.
Solid, actually. I like that.
Was some solid shit. But besides that, I mean, I don't know. I feel like that it traps you if you put it on a hero. Mm-hmm. If you put it on a hero, I think it's a bad thing. Because, like, heroes have to move an artifact. They have to die. If they don't die, it's not good for you, typically.
I did Theorycraft one where you put it on Crystal... Well, I guess it's not on that deck. But you put it on a very low damaging hero. And you have it, like, in front of a Bristleback or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That's the dream.
Slowly doing nothing.
That's the
but there's ways. There's always ways around it. Phase boots are cheap. If you have a Bristleback and you don't have ways to exchange positions, then you just don't know what you're doing in your deck.
Yeah.
So
I was wondering if that. I can't remember if that deck had phase boots in it.
One of them did. By the way, I upgraded successfully, so we're good to go, guys.
Hey.
So all right, I have something that I don't know if we can call it controversial in terms of cards that I don't think are as good as people think, but obviously. People that have been watching at home, they haven't seen all the cards, right? So they might, and I you guys might disagree with this. I think a couple of these cards aren't as good. But first of all, Red Mist Pillager was way better in those decks than I think it will be in normal decks because there's more AoE, more ways to actually control slacks.
Disagree.
Okay. That's fine.
I also disagree.
Okay.
Red Mist Pillager is like the, people abandon the lane all the time to let the Ancient get exposed. That's like the gotcha, bitch. They have to come back, and sometimes they commit so much to letting that Ancient lane go. It's just like the you're fucked now. I love that card. What are you talking about?
I'm not saying I don't like the card. I like it. I just think it's not as good as people think it is right now. That's what I'm saying.
You're crazy.
I don't think people think it's amazing. I think people think it's solid.
Okay.
I think it's amazing.
If they think
it's
solid,
if you got a red deck and there's no red mist, you're fucking up.
Because I look at something like, was it Conflagration? Did I say that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Right. Very good.
You just go, boop, put that in the lane with the Red Mist Pillager. Nothing feels better than killing multiple Red Mist Pillagers.
That's true.
That's true. But most people use that as soon as they can at level 5 to do that kind of incremental damage. And if you're planning it out, there's no way that you're going to expose the Ancient with something with a Conflagration with a red deck anyway. So people always commit those, and then you just find the lane where they didn't commit it, and then fucking... I just love it. Red has so much issues in the late game.
All right, so you guys disagree with me on that one. This one, I'm sure you will agree with.
You're an idiot. Moving on.
You will agree with me on this one. I don't think anybody likes this card. The Grand Melee. Does anybody think it's a good card? It's very, very situational, right?
I mean...
That card is hot garbage.
Yeah, I think especially in that deck, it didn't feel good. And the only way I could kind of see it be moderately fine would be like a mono red. And even then, I don't like it.
Hmm.
The fact that it gives your opponents the cleave as well ends up hurting you way more time than I think it ends up helping. Maybe against, say, the aggro deck, for instance, I could see it doing okay just because... getting that cleave can help you clear out these really wide lanes that red heroes can't handle very well.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, like, it felt very.
Yeah, I get the idea. Like, red's weakness is supposed to be that it can't deal with, like, these rush decks. You just control the red hero. You do everything else that you want. But that card just fucks that up. It really does.
See, like, that's why I like clear the deck, right? Because you don't get that negative side to it at all.
Yeah, and I think if you combine it with clear the deck, it could be one of the really strong factors.
Okay.
I mean, sure. But in what situation is that? Are you like, oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's...
8 cleave. Here we go.
I'm not saying it's unusable. Sure? It's not an unusable card, but it's definitely weak. All right, this last one, I'm very interested to see what you guys... Because I know Reddit loves this card. I think it's okay. So don't get me wrong. I don't think it's bad. I think it's okay. But it is not nearly as good as it looked. And that is Steam Cannon. Thoughts?
What? Are you stupid? Steam Cannon's incredible.
Okay.
Well, are you dumb?
I have my own thoughts on Steam Cannon.
Do you agree or disagree, Conrad?
On this one. I
agree
really
or disagree?
I kind of agree with him.
You guys are fucking dumb. Go ahead. I can't wait for this shit.
In terms of, like, the cards, it feels like Black's only way they can clear stuff in front of, like, heroes and creeps and all these other things is Steam Cannon. So, yes, it is situational. But did I feel like I felt, like, the impact of that card throughout all of these games? I don't know. At least with the aggro deck, I didn't get to that late game portion where I think Cannon's coming in.
All right, all I'm going to say is, first of all, I thought it looked great at PAX. And the reason for that is, correct me if I'm wrong, the only way to get rid of improvements is Pugna. Is that right? Am I missing anything? Okay, Apotheosis Blade. That's very difficult to get. So this has already been established, but there's a lot more ways to actually destroy improvements that just weren't at PAX. So I feel like Steam Cannon, it's 7 mana. And yeah, you can put it into any lane to try to, you know, just get away from whoever can actually destroy it. But it's so much mana expended for something that is much easier to kill than it was at PAX.
Whoa.
You know?
Whoa.
I think 4 piercing is pretty damn good.
No, it's good.
It's pretty damn good.
What's the issue? You said you were trying
okay.
to be edgy.
No, I said it's okay.
It's amazing. All right. I'm playing with a bunch of non-techies pickers. Let me talk to you about perceived threats and economy ways. All right? When there's a Steam Cannon on the board, the enemy cannot let anyone get to 4 HP. And that means that they're buying a bunch of items that they don't need to buy. And again, I'm this huge fan of gold, right? That slow gold tick of having to buy salves, hoods, anything that they can to make sure that no one's below 4. That shit adds up. That's a lot of wasted economics that can really come to fore you. Also, Black has no late game card. It's just, that's it. That is the late game card. I don't reveal any cards that are in the game right now that have not been shown, but I mean, it provides so much utility. Not only that, it's just a way for you to kill your own heroes too, which is super good on Black decks, surprisingly.
I disagree with that.
What are you talking about?
Well, it's always better to kill a hero in front of a Black hero.
If you take a tower with a Black hero and you don't get him out of that lane, That is right, the worst situation.
We're talking about some fringe-ass shit right now. Yeah, but
we're not like, talking about fringe. Steve Cannon is incredible.
Another thing I will say is because it's 7 mana, like I don't know how late your guys' games. Slax's game might go to like 18 mana for all I know. But my games, like 9 mana is like the peak, typically. You're not going to get that much use out of Steam Cannons in games like that, you know?
Yeah, the aggro deck, I think the best I got to is 8. And I would have rather played, I played Dimension Portal and like, what was the other one? Salt Ladders in like 1. Because that was going to help me win way more than a Steam Cannon. I mean, think about it, Jake, right? Like, all right, I go wide with it. He's playing, I can't remember what they were playing. I think Econ Ramp or whatever. But yeah. I needed to like push for damage. The only problem I have with Steam Cannon is it doesn't help me push for damage into that very, very late game scenario.
You know, all you guys do is talk about how important things like initiative is. You don't got to worry about that with Steam Cannon, baby. Your blue hero doesn't matter. A 4 piercing damage on a blue hero, that's like literally 90% of their health if they don't have any items. That's it. I mean, you worried about the next lane? 2 Steam Cannons kills literally any blue hero. In any lane.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If I have 3 Steam Cannons in lane, I'm going to feel great. But I just don't find myself getting to that point ever. In a normal deck, that's what I'm saying. Sure. I like the card a lot, though. Like, it's very cool in concept. It's difficult to pull off with the rest of the cards that we're not talking about, right?
I don't agree. Zeus, I know you don't. And Steam Cannon kill anyone. That's it. Even if they're time of triumph, I mean, that
you just said. You just said 14. Well, first of all, that's not necessarily the case. if I'm doing my math correctly.
Sure, whatever.
But it's pretty fucking powerful. Like, don't get me wrong.
Continue.
Oh, I was gonna say, I just think like it didn't feel like it really worked with that aggro deck as well as I wanted it to. Personally.
Now that I will agree with. With that particular deck, it wasn't the strongest. I would have much rather had some other cards in there that aren't available yet. So those would have been much better. It was still okay. I'll always take a Steam Cannon, baby. I love that thing.
Do you guys ever have moments of ESP, like legitimately asking, like where you feel something is going to happen and then it happens? You guys ever
That's
have
deja
that?
Deja vu. That's not ESP.
No, not deja vu. Not deja vu. It's different.
You're talking.
So you can like predict what's going to happen next.
Like I'm like, I wonder if this is going to happen and then it happens, but it's something like so, the odds of it happening are very low. Right.
Are you thinking of this in the relation to artifact? Because I feel like the odds of a lot of cards happening.
No, Connor.
All right, hold on. Oh, it's okay. It's one of these things.
We're talking about psychic power.
I'm just talking about ESP in general. Okay. I'm just saying there's been like 5 or 6 times in my life where something has happened that I've predicted that has been like crazy. I just know it's coming and it happens like 10 seconds later. Yeah. I don't know what that means. I'm not trying to get spiritual here, but. Okay, this happened to me during an artifact game when I was at PAX, and I feel so sad that this ESP moment was wasted on a meaningless match.
Is that like, do you have like an ESP monobar like that you can only use it?
So this is what happened. We were talking to devs. We were talking to Mr. Muir, one of the devs for artifact, and he was talking about how. Like throughout the entire beta, we have rarely used the 1 gold hold item, right?
Yeah,
where you spend 1 gold to hold the item in secret shop and you can buy it next year. You can keep doing that over and over. So I've used it maybe once ever because I had a really good situation occur, just really random. So in this match, right before the shopping phase, I'm like, I have 26 gold. I don't know why I have this feeling, but I feel like there's going to be a Horn of the Alpha on this. I had 24 gold. I think a Horn of the Alpha is going to show up on the left side here, and I'm going to hold it, and I'm going to get it next turn. And that is exactly what happened. I'm not even. This is not like some bullshit garbage. I'm talking. This is real, real life. Okay.
Oh my god.
And I won the game because of it.
1 in 8 chance.
8. There's 8 items in the game.
Secret shop is all.
Secret shop. Yes.
I mean, I don't think it's that crazy. I think holding the item is actually pretty strong.
Magic?
I'm not saying it's not strong. I'm saying something I never do and an item that it's very small chance of happening, and I knew it was going to happen. I'm like, I'm going to hold this for 1 go. I didn't even see it yet. It wasn't even shopping phase yet. Anyway, That's my.
You guys actually have deja vu moments though, where you can like slightly predict what's gonna happen next, like you know what the person's gonna say.
I actually had one at PAX too. I sat down in the stage chair, and then I saw I was playing you, and I knew I was gonna win.
Burn. Oh, that was good.
I have a theory that you get that feeling when a you from another dimension dies.
I died during Artifact. Is that what you're saying? I died for that horn of Alpha.
I think that all the interconnected, interdimensional souls are connected. When one dies, it's separated into the others. So when you have deja vu in that moment, something killed that one. Think of that.
You said you were getting spiritual, but this is too spiritual for me.
It ain't spiritual science.
I knew Slax would take over at some point. But anyway, that actually happened to me. At least that's my interpretation of it. Anyway, let's move on to the normal stuff. So I want to talk about new player mistakes that we saw very consistently and what can be done to remedy it, if anything. Because you have to keep in mind, these are players that played 5 freaking games of Artifact. So I think... like a lot of suggestions out there to improve upon, maybe, you know, whatever we're going to talk about in a second here, but keep that in mind that these literally 5 games of Artifact, so wouldn't get too ahead of ourselves. So clicking shiny things, anybody want to take this one?
I feel like that's something that a lot of Artifact players just learn after a while, but it was really interesting to see that consistent feedback. And I know the devs were just eating that shit up, because it's very hard to see that when you're watching games, to be like, oh, did he do that on purpose or not? And in these, it was like very, very, wow, okay, he just didn't know that existed.
Right.
So I would predict that Vovo will do something to make usable things more noticeable before the actual release. I think that problem is going to get solved.
It's funny, because I think I saw a little bit of the opposite of that, is that anytime somebody saw a shiny thing, they're like, I got to do that. But... like, so it's like, oh, and this is more of like an initiative thing more than anything else. But like, oh, I see I can play leather armor.
Hmm.
And you lose initiative into the second lane and suddenly you get Thunder God's Wrath and all your heroes die.
Sure.
But at the same time, I saw people miss multiple shiny things, such as I was watching a friend of mine play on the last day, and he ended up getting Horn of the Alpha. And there was 2 turns where he didn't play it.
Oh, that's 4 HP, bro. That's 4 HP.
And I was like... I'm dying on the
inside.
it just was super frustrating, I think.
It's weird because...
missed some of those things. And then I think there was another one where he could have fissured me and I couldn't have...
Fissure was very common, yeah.
Yeah, fissure was, I think, one of the most common.
And this is the thing, like, I can't see it from any perspective because I'm used to playing the game already. I personally don't think I ever had issues finding the clickable stuff because it is shiny and whatnot. I will say when you have Divine Purpose on, then it actually becomes almost impossible to see the, like, if Pugna Ward, sure. Like,
so,
or
so you're
Nether Ward.
Like, a lot of the visuals end up sometimes blocking some of the shininess.
With that one specifically, yes. But okay. So this is one, like, I'm not sure if anything needs to be done, honestly. I think it could just be a 5-game, you know, learning process, but we'll see if they do anything. And I think another one...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
No, I think that it's still a problem. It's a problem that persists for, I don't know, a while. I mean, I saw a lot of guys putting in steam cannons in their lane, and then they're just staring at it. It's just not noticeable enough for new players. And I know when I was first starting off many months ago in the beta, I would learn about something. Once I understood that card, I'd know to click it. But if it was like my first time using it, I still didn't get it. So I think there'll be a change.
I think it kind of reminds me of Dota a little bit, where there's certain interactions that until you see it in the game, it kind of completely changes the way you think about those things. So like, you know, over time, you know, you learn a certain thing, like pulling, for instance. You know, there's no really good way to learn how to pull in Dota, where, you know, you're pulling the creeps away and then stacks there.
Mm.
And when you finally do learn it, oh, it's like very simple, very easy. So I think Artifact is going to have a couple of these kind of mechanics that, oh, I can play an improvement right away as soon as I play it, or, you know, I can do it in another lane and then play it as soon as it's there. You know, it doesn't feel like there's any limiters on.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest errors as well, was the improvements being played in the same lane, or even spells that could be played in other lanes but still being used on the lane that they were in.
Yeah, Mist of Avernus, number one on that one. People kept playing it in the same lane, not knowing that playing in the next lane it would buff this round and shit like that. But It does come from experience, but hopefully they make the user interface a little bit more welcoming for new guys. I guess they got to have some kind of like ceiling, right? That's what could separate a good player from a bad player. So whatever.
And I think you alluded to this, Conrad, the whole giving up initiative. I mean, that was probably the most obvious one going in. Nobody's going to understand that fully. It's not that difficult to explain what it is. It's difficult to actually understand how to use it properly, though.
I think it's a little difficult to explain how it is. Foshi told me the greatest thing that I've heard. She said that one of the Valve guys told her, when you play a card, you give your enemy initiation. So initiation. If you don't play a card, you don't give them anything. You keep your initiation. It's a physical thing that you give and you keep.
You need to stop saying initiation.
What are you talking?
I actually think that's a pretty good analogy. Is that when you play a card and you know maybe you look at their mana and they have low mana and maybe they won't be able to play a card. I'm gonna assume I'm losing initiation the next slate. Absolutely, you're kind of always giving it away whenever you play something. And then you know hopefully you're either able to get that back. Like there was one time where like I said, a guy played leather armor. And I was able to be much more successful in my next lane because I took that risk in the first lane, hoping that you know maybe he won't pass, and he didn't, and it was a positive for me. But you know, it's something that people will learn over time. I think
from now on, I ain't giving away shit. I'm a greedy boy. You don't get nothing to my games, okay? I never give initiation.
Never play a card.
Never. AFK decks. That's my new thing.
I'm sure that you could win with that somehow.
I've been working.
All red heroes or something?
A lot of Hearthstopper. A lot of Hearthstopper.
Well, that's playing a card, though. Yeah.
Well,
you still have to play that.
Well, I'll never end the turn with you going next. Let's put it that way.
Great. All right, so moving on. So obviously there's not a whole lot we can talk about in terms of what's not at PAX, but I thought we could be kind of vague about it. The beta experience so far, like what kind of decks you guys like or play styles in general. Like for me, for example, and I've talked about this on stream already at PAX, I'm a huge fan of red-black, personally. You get like the beefcakes up front. Then you got the black heroes that are really good at taking down towers or moving from lane to lane. That playstyle is legit, and it makes Slax really angry.
Such an advanced playstyle. It really is. My red card kill hero. My black card make money. Very advanced, very good. And the best part is just how skilled you have to be to play games like fucking Coup de Grace. Oh, the thought processes are out of this world. It's so great. I love that it doesn't have a counter. It's so good. Divine Purpose, fuck you. Cut through that shit. You know, it doesn't matter. It's Coup de Grace. It kills everything no matter what. What a balanced, cool card that is. I love red-black decks. It's really the greatest minds in the fucking universe come up with that
and
shit.
What's your favorite kind of deck, Slax? Do you like the rainbow decks? Do you like doing one of each color?
I like decks that are creative and you have to have a good win condition to win. I find those to be fun. Winning is not everything to me. How you win, the journey, is what I care about. You might not understand that because you're a red deck, black piece of shit who doesn't care about... Every day you just fucking, I pick Bristleback and Axe. I pick BA. I win another game. Well, what the fucking do, asshole? I like enjoying my games and thinking of fun strats. I can't wait till the fucking game is out and every goddamn game is a black red and you get to live this shit every fucking day, Suns fan.
I'm fine with that, bro. I am perfectly fine with that. Conrad, how about you?
I don't necessarily play to win. I like to make fun, creative things. So I actually like mono black a lot.
Oh yeah.
I have a. It's very similar to I think the one that we saw with. The aggro, it's meant to just bust down towers as fast as possible, and I think that's always been a really fun play style. And then I also really like mono green. I think there's some really interesting cards in that. I think we got to see a lot of it in Econ Ramp, and I think you know we'll probably see something similar to that. It's very similar to Econ Ramp,
essentially. Yeah. Right.
I don't think a deck can be successful as a mono unless it's green. I feel like that's the only deck that you can run like a mono and feel like you can still win every game. Black is like mono black A lot of shit's got to go right to win that game.
We'll play some games, Jake.
Okay. I got a great idea for a deck, though. It's red-black. Now, listen to me here. The red hero's very strong, hurt very hard. Black hero make very good money. Very all right. Big thought.
All right, let me throw this out here. I think you're thinking of the wrong deck, because my red-black is actually a tower pusher. And in one of the matches that... Can we talk about that? No. One of the matches I played, I won on turn two with it. It's a tower pusher. Hardcore. Gets right up the gut. It's not a moneymaker, Slacks.
I
know.
Right up the butt? Right up the gut?
Right up the
gut.
Butt.
Wow. Right up the gracious gut. Gracious me. I like your strategy. Very smart. Kill hero. Big hero. Make much push.
Wait, Jake.
Very good.
We haven't heard what color you like, Jake.
What?
He likes
what
them all. Colors? He plays one of each. I'm telling you.
I love them all. I like rainbows personally. The rainbow decks are the funniest thing. I'm a techies player. So the more miserable the enemy is, if my enemy says, "Why the fuck am I losing to this?" I've already won. I love it. Even I've won games where I didn't actually win. You know what I'm saying? Like I get a message from a very respected person in the community that just goes on round six, "What the fuck is this?" That's what I want. But
can we make that stick, by the way, rainbow? I really like that. I don't know what the actual term for one of each. I guess technically need a second color, the duplicate. But rainbow deck, that has to be a thing.
Oh, I love them.
Conrad, I know you like it.
If you can make it happen, go for it, man.
Good.
It's
let's start it.
It's very hard to make those things anywhere near usable.
If you can get a 20% win rate, I will be very surprised. I will be happy for you, actually.
Yikes.
All right, so last segment, I want to talk about the future of Artifact. What is everybody's thoughts on the streamability? Is that, I mean, you work at Twitch, Conrad. This is a great topic for you, my friend. What do you think about the streamability and the esports nature?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the tougher ones with the three boards. You know, it's kind of like just walking up to the booth and you're showing up halfway through a game. It's really kind of hard to tell where things are kind of at during that time. I was telling some people at the event, each Artifact game is kind of like a story, and you know, showing up halfway through the story, you miss that really, really important part that sets everything up to that point.
Yeah.
And so if you, and especially, you know, because of the three lane aspect, I don't necessarily know that, you know, if you jump into a stream, for instance, how am I going to tell, you know, what happened in the first lane, second lane, third lane, without having like a lot of knowledge about the game kind of going in.
I feel like that's responsibilities on the streamer. I feel like a lot of guys are planning to come from Hearthstone and other games like that, and it's going to be very difficult for them because instead of just yabbering to their webcam, not talking about anything, a lot of that explanation is going to be needed. A lot of these like Hearthstone streamers and stuff, their personalities, the chat comes for them and their chat interaction because they're not actually playing a game. They're playing Hearthstone, which is just like throw your fucking credit card at the screen and see what happens. But, for me, those guys are going to have a lot of trouble coming over because they're going to have to, as you said, Conrad, explain their thoughts three lanes down the thing. Artifact takes a lot of focus. You fuck up once in a very pivotal time. There's not a lot of time to come back. So it's going to take some special cookies to be able to stream Artifact effectively and interact with the chat. You're going to have a lot of like your Arteezy streamers, I think, for Dota that are just like very quiet and the chat's trying to figure out what the hell they're doing, which is just as fun. But, I think it definitely has a future, though. And I feel like because of the competitive nature of the game, more so than other card games that I've seen. Again, I've never played a different card game, but it seems like it has a really good esports-centric future more than streaming. But at the same time, it follows my streaming it follows my guidelines for what makes a good streaming and esport game. It has to be fucking miserable to play. It has to be way too stressful. If it's fun, there's no reason to play it. That's why Overwatch sucks. I mean, because it's you go in and you watch some asshole play McCree, and you're like, I can play McCree. You don't want to watch this douchebag play McCree. Artifact's going to be too hard sometimes for some people. They get too nervous, and then it's more fun to just watch someone else do it.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think
you agree with everything, Conrad.
I don't think I'm as agreeable as you imagine me as, Jake. I think the hardest part for me is that, yeah, as I'm coming into it, you know, I look at, all right, turn, you know, you're on the 5-mana turn, right? And suddenly you see a lot of heroes in one lane or heroes in, like, you know, a middle lane. It's just really hard for me to understand how that got there. you know, without having a lot of knowledge about the game previously. And sure. I think it's kind of one of the issues that Dota runs into, but Dota has the ability to, you know, you could be flashy or skillful at almost any time in Dota, or there's like a team fight or something like that, where Artifact, like, you really, really need to understand all the plot points to where you get to that point specifically.
Yeah, I think the game was made for esports. I'm not super worried about the competitive scene at all. If they're going to follow around the Dota kind of blueprint, I guess you could say, where you have this big tournament, I think pro players, I guess we can get into this next section, who we actually think is going to be crossing over, because I think pro players from all the card games will come over, because number one, there's more money, and number two, of course, we don't know this long term, but I'm assuming it's going to be like Dota, so long term, probably more money. And number two, there's less RNG than other games that are very popular. From the streamer perspective, that's where it gets interesting, right? I'm not sure. I think a lot of these people that are streaming, like Hearthstone, for example, will stay with Hearthstone. They'll probably try Artifact, then they'll figure out... It's hard to give up an audience. Like, you can't just switch games, a lot of these guys, right?
Yeah.
It's not like these multi-game streamers. Like, some people can play a bunch of games.
Streamers can, because it's about their personality. It's not about the game. For a Dota player, you can't switch. I mean, that they're there for the Dota, and you're the second half. For Hearthstone, they're there for you, and the game comes after. I
don't think so. I think that's true for a couple people, but no. I think, like, if you just look at any big personality, of course, you're not talking about maybe the top two or three, somebody, like, a little bit lower down, they switch games. They're not getting, like, they're getting, like, 10% of viewership that they usually get. Most of the people are there for Hearthstone.
Yeah. And I think that's the way I look at it, too, is, yeah, you'll have these people kind of at the top of these directories, you know, doing very, very well, and I think they it's hard for them to consider that switch, where you're going to find a lot of, and this is both actually streamers, but, like, people who are either up-and-coming or, you know, kind of newer to the game. I could see them being more inclined to switch over, especially with, you know, the potential for more money. I think the one thing, though, is that I, you know, you say less RNG. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. It's more controlled RNG. And I actually see that bothering people a lot more, because they'll look at it and they go, I don't know if I can guess this. I don't know if I can figure out, you know, where to put my units. And I think it's something that's going to take a long time for even like top players to learn.
I guess that's a good point.
I like that point. I like the, how you called it, controlled RNG, because it really is. I don't feel like there's a point in the game where it's like, when you have access to all the cards, you feel like you got robbed, for me personally. I always feel like I could have had this in my deck and whatever. The only situation where I really feel fucked is like if I get in the super unlucky, my first draw is like 7, 8, and 7 and 6 mana cards, and then I just never get anything. And that's just kind of card games in general. I feel like a lot of people have been talking about mulligan. That's the number one thing I heard from new guys. Where's the mulligan? How come there's no mulligan in this game? So that's interesting.
That's what I thought when I first started playing too, and I noticed that after a couple weeks I didn't care anymore about the mulligan, honestly.
I also agree in the same way. Like, build your deck around it. That's what I call control. Well, it's not controlled RNG, but like,
no, it really is.
It is. It's a factor that you have to think about. Sure. You know, like when I see, I have to factor in that what if one creep falls into this lane and one creep falls in that lane, or two creeps are in the lane that I didn't really want them to. These are calculated risks you're always taking throughout the game that, you know, force you to kind of think on the fly and really think about how you want to, you know, either deploy your units or place units on your turn. You know, I think that's a better way of looking at it than anything else.
Yeah, I had a long talk with a fan waiting in line just about, like, how can there not be a reset option? Because what if you just get the worst deck ever? And I feel like he was very used to other card games where the worst deck in the first couple hands can really just destroy you. But I feel like there's so many ways to get back in Artifact. Like, there's so many ways to salvage a game. And that's something that we saw a lot in the early beta. A lot of guys coming in and surrendering, like, round 2 or 3. And you found the Dota players were actually some of the best guys in the beta, not because they were good at card games, but because they never surrendered. We're just not used to that. We always fight to the end because there could always be some kind of F-up, where you don't see that in a lot of competitive games. So in Artifact especially, I could like count on my fingers after playing for 5 months the amount of games that I've lost where it's like, okay, I actually, hands off the keyboard, had no chance of coming back in this game. So
and I don't know. A lot of players, especially early on, will get very discouraged when their heroes die early as well, which is something you get over in addition, right? That's just something you get over, and it's not that big of a deal. So I wanted
especially
to bring up...
playing like I was going to say, especially playing blue decks, like,
oh,
I expect my heroes to die first.
Yeah, you should be expecting it. That when you're playing blue, like, you're going to die. Right?
This is happening, but you know, you get late, but you get to late game, and now your powerful spells are in play, and it completely changes the way you know you look at the game.
Right.
Can I take a moment to shit talk, please? By the way, before we move on,
please
keep your ears out, wonderful people out there on Twitch, for your favorite pro players just shit talking the game from other games. Oh, Artifact sucks. Oh, I'm not going to move over. And then they see the $1 million prize pool for the new thing. And they're like, well, you know, maybe I've learned a lot. It's, oh, I can't wait for the fucking apology videos. You money grubbing bitches. I can't wait for that shit. I'm sorry, but I've been, ever since the first announcement at TI and the whole crowd goes, oh, I've been like, you guys are on the wrong side of history. Right? This is the women's suffrage movement. You bitches are on the wrong side of history. Then you're going to feel bad later. This, we've won over the community. I think the community is ready for Artifact. I think they're happy. Everybody that knows about it is really hyped. And now we get to see the other personalities trying to salvage whatever shitty thing that they've built over years to, oh, it's not gonna be good. And then, oh, can you guys watch me play Artifact? Fuck you, bitch. You should have been on the first train trying to salvage your shit. I can't wait for you to come into my game, because I'm gonna wreck your shit and your fans. Thank you.
Okay,
I'm a lot less passionate than Jason. You know, I think some people are gonna move over, and that's natural. I think you know, any right now prize money, and I think a lot of these games are a little bit lower than others. And
Don't get me wrong.
$1 million draw is,
cool. Go ahead. I'm cool with people moving over. I think it's a great thing. But I'm just saying, watch for those same people shit talking the game before they move over, and then that hypocrisy. Clip it. Save it. Torment them for the rest of their lives. Because that's what they're going to do. So they're going to shit-talk it hard until they finally make the progression. I've seen a lot of PUBG Fortnite people be the same way. Woo! Both those games suck, though. So I don't care about that.
Okay, one thing I will say about the game, and again, I played Hearthstone. I like watching, or used to like watching it a lot. Other than that, not a whole lot of card game experience. I think Artifact will actually cater to more Dota players than you would imagine. I'm not talking about, of course, card game players will be interested and they'll try at the very least. Dota players, I think, will actually be invested because of the lore, if nothing else. Just the idea that they're familiar with like the heroes and some of the storylines, it actually makes the game, and this is something that I never thought I'd say because you know how much, little I care about lore usually, but it actually made a huge difference with my investment in this game. It just feels so much more interesting to play. And looking forward to more Dota people that have never played card games to try out Artifact at some point.
I definitely attribute a lot of the success to Hearthstone because of that. I never played WoW, and I was a Warcraft. I did play Warcraft 3, but like I know a lot of people that are like, oh, I know all these like units, heroes, kind of all that, you know, that lore from Warcraft actually really drew in, I think, a lot of people into Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm.
I think I agree. I think there'll be some very interesting stuff with Dota, and I'm sure Jake will be the forefront expert on all this.
You know what is interesting? A lot of people have been debating with me. I think that Dota's player base will increase because of Artifact, because it is actually bringing people from a genre that's never played MOBAs and introducing them into these characters and stories, and then they're going to think, all right, where did this come from? Because it really does get to you. I mean, eventually you can just kind of randomly see stuff. I'm gonna make a sad, very sad admission here, but every night I stay up and I read random lore wikis about things that I have no interest in watching, including some animes. I don't even watch anime, but I've memorized like the entirety of the No Hero Academia shit just because I see some stupid assholes with t-shirts and I read all about it and I know all the plot lines and everything. I'm not gonna watch that shit because, you know, I have a wife and I'm a grown adult. But lore stories are part of our human evolution. We sit by campfires and tell each other tales, and it actually does make a huge difference. And people say it doesn't, but I guarantee you, when this game is out, I think the Dota player base will increase as well, especially when they get Dota Plus, which plays your Artifact game after you sign up for a Dota game. Because you know what's going to happen. People are going to quee into a Dota game, start up Artifact. It's going to find a game in 3 minutes, and then they're going to lose their Artifact game. Not if they can pay for a bot to play with. Checks in the mail, Malvo.
Well, not sure about that one, but let's move on to a final couple segments here. Concerns that have been voiced by some people in the community. Some of the wordage, for example, on the text, they think it's a little bit too wordy. I guess better is there a better way to put that? Well, conflagration should be changed the name. Let's be real. That's
short.
It's really tough.
Short, that's a real bad name.
Sword short.
But some of the text
this game was not
maybe
designed for caster, by the way.
Some sword of the text short. Too long. You guys think? Like, I think Apotheosis Blade is the perfect example of just a shit ton of text. Do you think that's a major concern? Or is that something that's not that big of a deal?
I mean, you know, at least with one set out right now, and you know, I assume they're going to be making more cards. It could get a little like more confusing, but at the same time. I appreciate the specificity of it. Like, there was times where I think cards weren't supposed to be doing what I thought they were supposed to be doing. But then I read it and I was like, oh, I'm the idiot. Like, and yes, it requires you to look a little more carefully, but I think this game is, you know, supposed to reward the people that are understanding all these interactions and kind of a lot of crazy interactions and how they all work together.
I think there should be more. Okay, when I'm playing a game against one of those slow roll people that wait till the timer's all the way out, all I'm doing is double clicking on cards. Shit. When I double click on cards, I want to see a little mini lore movie play about their origin story so I have something to fucking do.
That's
I love it.
What I'm imagining is, you know, your lowdown videos you did for TI. You show up on screen like, hello, I'm here to explain.
Sorla Khan is a hero in Artifact.
Wow. Like, you're playing Sorla Khan.
You know you'd watch
not
it
bad.
If you're up against
well, actually, something, I didn't have this written down, but I think something that would be cool is very Hearthstone-esque, I know. Be able to interact with the board a little bit more would be cool. Like, you can play with the imp a little bit. You can tickle him. But I'm thinking, like, play with the river or something.
Can?
Yeah, he has, like, a little... By the way, the imp's animations are god tier. They're unbelievable.
They're too good, I think.
Too good?
I was very excited for the workshop. As somebody who started their Valve adventure in Team Fortress 2, everything that I think about is, how can Valve make money on me? That's all I think about.
You're worried about Valve?
I know. I mean, it's
what
just how
boy.
I've been conditioned as a Valve customer. Be like, where's the money opportunity?
No,
so,
nice. Oh, sorry, go
custom
ahead.
Imps. Yeah. That, I was like, oh, yeah, there's going to be so many custom couriers. There actually can't. When you think about it, how many animations do those motherfuckers have? Hundreds. Yeah. How is anyone going to make custom imps? They'd have to do literally 120 separate animations. It's crazy.
I mean, I look at that and I go, I think about voice packs in Dota. And I mean, there's a lot of lines in some of those, like hours of lines in some of those packs. So I'm
but imagine the double kill when you get like a Zeus ult or something.
No
that's
one cares.
Hype.
That you're he's trying to get kill streak lines. Single kill. Card kill.
I'd buy that, man. I don't know. I'd buy that.
Conrad, we can't change the imps or the imp skin will be far away, but what we can do is give them custom voices. Just imagine the Purge Artifact sound pack. The imp just looks at you and he goes, that was an inefficient use of mana. And then he looks back. That's the future of Artifact cosmetics. Let me tell you. Imp voices.
No,
I'll be there.
I'll actually disagree with you a little bit here, Sunset, because for me, I'm like constantly thinking when I'm in a game of Artifact. I have no time to click on other stuff. I'm like, all right, how do I do this move like four turns?
Right, but
like,
how does that hurt though?
It does hurt. Like if a bunch of kazoos are going off.
I'll get distracted.
Well, you don't have to click them. It's not like the opponent's clicking something that you see. It's you clicking your mouse. Just don't click your mouse.
Most people want to pay attention, not play Where's Waldo when the fucking turn is happening.
Dude, have you played against some of these card game players? Like, they take forever. I want to do something. I've already decided my next three moves. They're the ones jerking themselves off. I don't know what's going on in their head.
What's your win rate against those card game players is the first question.
It's not great because I get very angry. I made somebody... Never mind, this is a bad story, but I got really angry at one guy, one time. It was the one time I let myself go, and then I felt really bad after.
What if you could double-click on the board, and a little trap door opens, and there's just a booty, and it goes... And it just does a little tweet. A little, that could be a cosmetic.
Sure. Wow. I think Aurelia... I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
I can't wait to buy that for 3 cents on the marketplace.
So something else that I would buy, and I'd be interested in what the community actually thinks, just changing the color of the board, like having a dark mode would be so legit.
Well, sure.
You know,
sure.
Just like a
you
like
think
a
this
dark
board
black
is like
board?
Shining bright in your face or something?
No,
like,
it's just
ah, this brown.
Oh, the radiant ace. I can't see.
Oh, it changed like the way the towers look
that.
And stuff.
Of course,
you know?
They're gonna sell cosmic right. board something. Come on.
Can you play like Hand of God without blinding yourself or something? Or...
All right, one last actual concern since we kind of got off topic with the cosmetics and whatnot. I saw a thread about lane recognition. Do you guys think this is an actual problem where you can't easily? I mean, there are some differences, but you can't easily tell the difference between lane 1, 2, and 3. Or is that just more they haven't played enough to understand?
You definitely can when you're playing. Maybe as a spectator, I could kind of see
right,
that.
Spectator,
if you're like, as Conrad said, you jump into a game and you're like, what lane am I in? You right. probably have that problem for about 10 seconds. Unless you've got some real mental issues. Mm-hmm. If the round is over and you see the screen go right and you're like, where am I? I think you have some other stuff that Artifact can't help you with.
I mean, I don't think it's too much of an issue. I think that's probably, once again, an experience thing. You know, the people who probably have some of these concerns may, you know, they've only played a couple of games, right? The key thing I would look at is, I think a lot of people are looking at the top left. There's like I call it the mini map. I don't know if other people call it that, but for me, it kind of helps you understand where you're at. Oh, I can see who has initiative, who has the action phase.
Right.
And then, you know, oh, I'm in lane 2. All right, I understand what I'm doing here. But I think Jake's absolutely right. When you're playing, I 100% know where I'm at. If I would be genuinely surprised. I don't think I've ever been surprised about
right. what But at the same time, I would say, and I completely agree with everything both you're saying, but there's no downside to making them look a little bit different for the spectator, because there's a lot of people that will come on stream watching a game, and then maybe that's something that turns them off immediately because they're just too confused. Like anything that we can do to create a little bit of like a noob-friendly atmosphere, I guess, which Dota has been, I mean, Dota is like the least noob-friendly game in the world. And I know that Artifact is, I wouldn't put it on the same level as Dota, let's be real, but it's in the same category almost, if that works. So anything like that to help, I don't see any downside to it, you know? Like, why not?
You guys ready to man up? You want to talk about some risky shit? Now that we've been in the beta, now that we've shown the people, what are your actual concerns for the game? Not the people's concerns. What are your concerns as someone who's intimate with the future of Artifact? Huh? Let's get crazy.
I think I brought it up a little bit. I think streamability is really tough. Like, you know, Hearthstone and now Magic Online or Magic Arena, I can't remember what it's called. They have this ability to like, hover over a card. It's an extension on Twitch. And I think those have been really, really useful for those. And I think that to me is like an essential thing that you put into Artifact. I couldn't imagine, you know, coming into it, you know, having access to see the cards is much more useful than not. And I think to draw in new users, you're going to have to be able to help them understand kind of like what cards are available, the unique things that they do. You know, maybe when you hover over a card, a short video Jake plays.
That's right.
Just screaming in your ear. That's exactly what everybody wants, right?
Right. But I think I think having the streamability, but I think that's going to be counteracted by, I think what Jake said earlier is good streamers, good commentators. Those people are going to really help. I hope there are a lot of like people doing good work on that front, because those are going to be the true ambassadors.
And I'm sure Slax has something to add to this, so I'll go next. I actually don't have that major concerns. I think my expectation level is that from a popularity standpoint, it'll be underneath Hearthstone because it's less casual, which makes sense. But from a competitive aspect, it will be by far the best card game. That's what I'm expecting right now. And like, when's the last time Valve screwed up a game? Like actually like made a not great game? I literally can't think of one. Like Ricochet, but people love Ricochet.
I love Ricochet.
Right? Exactly. But that's like such a small thing. This is a major title from a company that just doesn't make bad games. It just doesn't happen, you know? And they always cater to the competitive scene, which is great because it extends the lifetime of the game, makes it more interesting from, you know, a global perspective. And I'm just super excited. And Slax, I'm sure you can take this in a
different
direction.
Valve's made a couple bad games. They just bury them really good. They just delete that Reddit thread real quick. Alien Swarm. The Portal clone, where the truck simulator, where it goes like, you know, That's not, you don't know that these games exist.
Wait, Alien Swarm was made by Valve?
You're talking about Polybridge Portal or whatever?
I'm talking about Polybridge Portal. I'm talking about Alien Swarm. They bury that shit quick.
Did they make those games, though?
I could have sworn they did not make Alien Swarm.
They're licensing their IPs, but I didn't think they were like directly involved.
They made them.
Alien Swarm is a freeware multiplayer top-down shooter video game by Valve.
I actually enjoyed that one. I don't know, Jake.
Don't be a suck-up, Connor.
No, I actually... Here's the thing. I played. I remember when it came out, I was like, ooh, new Valve game. And I was like, oh, this is fun.
Was it considered like a major title, though? I barely remember it.
It wasn't a major title. They buried it quick. They're not major. I'm just kidding. Valve obviously has not had a lot of... those games are more like fun side projects for them anyway. That's like saying that the archery game in the HTC Vive was a failure, which it was not. That is the greatest HTC Vive game. That archery game... fucking great. Anyway, so concerns for Artifact. Are you ready for this? Connor, yes. I'm going to piggyback back off you. New user experience. Everyone that's come in contact with this game so far has really wanted to play it. Either have beta testers that asked for the keys or were handed the keys with the expectation to play. You have the PAX community that waited in line for 5 hours that really wanted to play. Those guys are willing to struggle through and make sure that they find their way. Don't do what you did with Dota. Have a goddamn tutorial. Have something in there that is really pounding how to do things and supporting that stuff. Because there's a lot of guys. It's a very, very hard game, especially when you look at stuff like Hearthstone, where it's just so much user-friendly. And that's why Dota lost the league. It's because they weren't going there and having a good intro for people. Don't make the same mistake. You could be better than Hearthstone if you just spend a lot of time on trying to get people that try the game and then think about running away. Just make it easier for them to get into it. That's it. That's my biggest concern.
I think from the tutorial perspective, they can... I feel like Dota could have done this as well, and they still can, although it's really late now. I feel like you can just outsource this to just like people like us, just anybody in the community, just to make content that's put in the game. That's how I feel about it. Like, imagine Dota, where you just literally have videos in-game going over, or even, like, workshop creators creating, like, a mod that teaches you how to do basic stuff. Because right now, what is there to... There's, like, two little mini-games right now. I don't even think they work in Dota right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the problem. Why you can't actually do a Dota tutorial. Because, remember, they actually made that one with the lore, and it was like, you played a sniper fighting Tidehunter. Yeah. The first thing you have to do is buy a stout shield. And it's like a poor man shield. And then poor man shield is taken out. So every single time there's any changes to a game that's ever evolving, like Dota 2, where 2 weeks from now, a hard-coded thing that you have to do in the tutorial gets changed, that they always have to keep going back to that.
Yeah,
so
but that's why you outsource it.
Tutorials,
just sure. Outsource it. Somebody
I mean,
else do it.
Do you pay those people? What do you do?
I don't know.
I mean, I think they're going to expect that people are going to do it naturally. Like, I know a lot of people that I introduced to Dota, either I ended up playing with, or, you know, I would say, hey, check out this guide. And I, you know, it's Purge's Guide. I think Purge's Guide is like one of the best resources from the community members. And having that community voice to me is actually, I prefer it over having like a developer voice, because developers definitely look at a game a lot differently than I think, you know, individuals within the product itself. Because you're able to speak the language of those folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the
but
devs,
again,
they're thinking on a completely different level.
That's who we are. We're Dota players. That's the whole point. We are in this game, playing this game, because we like that challenge. We like seeing something almost impossible and figuring out how we can get better at it. The casual card game audience, hopefully, is not going to be the same as the Dota audience, so that this game can really do well. So they need to cater. I don't want people going into Artifact and be like, you should look up Purge's video about how to play Artifact. I want them to have a hard, very, very in-depth, easy-to-pick-up tutorial, because a lot of those guys aren't Dota players. MOBA players are a different breed entirely. I disagree with you guys.
I don't know. I mean, I look at like something like Magic, for instance. I don't play Magic in any consistent basis, but I've learned throughout the years. My friends do like drafting and some of the other formats and help me play with their decks. And like, you know, I think it's going to be friends helping friends a lot in these cases. You know, I think everybody who's ever picked up Dota had that one friend that was really into it compared to everybody else.
Well, sure.
It kind of helped them kind of get to the point where they were, you know, what I would call proficient, or like at least knowledgeable enough to understand the game. And then, you know, through that and then streams and then tournaments, I really think that's going to develop. But I mean, I don't think a tutorial hurts. but I don't necessarily believe it has to be official. I'm okay with having media members build up stuff.
Nah, I want this to be better than Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike is easy. You go in there, man, shoot, gun, and that's why it's such a popular esport, because it's not hard. You figure it out. You man, buy gun, man, shoot, gun. If Artifact could just be a card game that's super approachable, not like Dota, anybody can jump on and play it. I think the sky's the limit on this game. That's how we beat Hearthstone.
That's a different game.
What?
That's an easy game.
Well, yeah.
We just talked, I think, like for a while now about the nuances and all the things we enjoy about it.
Okay, exactly. The one thing I will say...
And then suddenly, like, you know, I'm like, kinda, it's got to be easy now.
I'm kind of in the middle with you two. I understand what both you're saying. There's no right or wrong answer, honestly. All I can say is I did start Artifact for the first time ever, however long ago. I actually did not get taught how to play at all, and it was very confusing. I had no idea what was going on. So after that, I had to look into, well, I guess we can't talk about exactly what it is, but there was stuff put in there at the time that you could help your way, and that helped a lot. It helped a shit ton. And I think something in the game, whether it's from the community or from Valve itself, would be a good idea at some point. All right, the last thing I wanted to talk about, which probably won't be that long of a discussion. A lot of this is in response to some Hearthstone streamers that have been kind of watching Artifact videos and talking about it on stream, some of the negative feelings that they have. And I want to talk about one in particular, which is mobile. So their first reaction, as was mine when I first played, was because I knew that they kind of wanted to do mobile at some point. I'm like, there is no fucking way they're going to do mobile for this, right? There's no way. But I now will take that back, even though I never said that officially. I think officially speaking, they said that mobile would be out like 6 months to a year. I don't know, sometime after launch, right?
They said 2019 in, I think, some of the PAX information.
So it's not going to be on launch. So what I've been doing is I've been playing, obviously playing on my computer, but also I played on my TV with Steam. By the way, Steam Link is fucking godly. I love it. Been playing on my TV with Steam Link with a Steam controller. It's very good. And I've also played on my actual phone using Steam Link. And I am very surprised at how playable it actually is. Obviously, they need to change some stuff, make some UI a little bit bigger to actually fit the phone properly. But even just as is, where it's just copying it from my computer, it is extremely playable, which I was very surprised by. Of course, you need to know how to play.
I was about to say, I think
you need to know how to play first.
It's like a knowledge thing, right? Where,
yes.
Like, I feel I can watch a Dota stream at 360p on my phone. But that's only because I understand, you know, kind of
how much do they pay you at Twitch? You need a better phone, buddy. Holy shit.
I mean, sometimes the internet's bad, you know, like the
Lord. Thing,
for instance, I barely got internet in there, you know, I'm just trying
challenge.
To say.
Don't you just make it touch screen? Isn't that all they need to do is just highlight a card, move the card with your finger?
Well,
Isn't that it?
It's like, think of it. I don't know the specifics, but you can't just port it. Like it's a completely different operating system, right? Android. Or whatever, or Apple, I guess. You have to make it for two different systems. So as far as I know, you have to make it from the ground up. But UI-wise, that's the thing I was really worried about. And I'm not worried anymore after playing it. So
that's great to hear. I mean, I think mobile is the key to success for a lot of games today. You know, I think we're seeing mobile gaming grow bigger than ever. A couple of my coworkers, you know, Clash Royale, they really...
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. They you know, kind of enjoy a lot of these competitive games, but they couldn't really find one until they found Clash Royale on the phone.
Well, yeah, because it's a fucking phone game.
I mean, but
I can't find a competitive game I'm good at, but I am good at Candy Crush, a very competitive game.
I don't know if I agree with that side, but you know, they're looking for something to whet their appetite on the road or while they're on the go, rather than, you know, sit down at a computer and be able to play a full game of Dota. Right.
All
right. These are happy medium places, and I think if Artifact can do that, it's going to put itself in a very, very strong position for it.
It is a dream to be able to play Artifact on the Nintendo Switch. Oh, can you imagine that shit?
I doubt that'll happen.
Well, no shit.
I doubt that'll happen. That would be cool, though. That would be cool.
Oh man.
I think the big thing with the Switch problem, not a Switch problem, but something that's a hindrance to the Switch is the what do you call it? You have to pay for online, just like any of the consoles.
Now you do.
Before you didn't, right? Soon, or is it already started?
I
can't remember.
I think it's coming soon.
Yeah. But so like that's something that prevents people from getting into online games on console, particularly like Xbox Live, PlayStation Plus, I think it's called.
Yeah. All these back things. When I was 8 years old, I was very mad about playing online because I had $50 to my name for a year, so I had to put it in there. But as an adult, God bless paying online. My friends were all on the PS4. There's like 8 fucking 6-year-old kids running on there because their parents just let them have the controller. Xbox gaming back in the day versus free PS. Woo! It was miles ahead, bro.
First of all, I'm
atrocious.
I'm impressed that you had $50 and you're 8 years old because I didn't see money until I was 18.
When I turned 11 years old, my parents are like, you're on. I had to work at the cafeteria. Shit was rough. And I spent it all on Xbox Live, baby. I like paying for internet. Hell yeah. Get those little kiddos out of here.
Well, this is the end of the podcast, believe it or not.
No, there's so much more Artifact to talk about, Sunzy.
I'm sorry, buddy. Like I talked about at the beginning, we will want to do this on a consistent basis once we're able to. Obviously, there's not a whole lot to talk about other than what we discussed. So look forward to that. Remember the Artifaction GG social medias. Follow those to right now. Actually, I think it should be announced already. The keys being given away. Do you guys have any last words for episode 1?
That's right. Send me your videos of streamers talking shit so that we can replay them on the stream. Do it, boys. Record them, clip them, and save it. Thank you.
Don't send me those things, and I hope everybody actually enjoys the game once it kind of gets a little more public. I think it's really fun, and I love talking about it with other people, so I can't wait to have larger conversations around it with either other card game players or also just, I have never played a card game before Artifact, and I definitely enjoy this game a lot.
Power to Artifact Brothers all the way, friends. If you check
out
the link,
the Artifaction.
If you,
yeah!
I'm not doing
if you
this.
Check out, come on, Conrad, don't be left out. Come on, buddy, you can do it. All right, if you check out the
there
link in the description,
okay.
Make sure to not tweet at Conrad, by the way, because of the insolence he just showed us. No brotherhood
do
here.
Not speak to him.
We're gonna make
enjoy
this. We're gonna make this also an audio only podcast. Or I shouldn't say audio only. Audio only option. So if you check out the link in the description. You can listen to it again. I don't know why I said that at the end. You've already watched the entire video. But that's fine. If you want to hear us again at work, in case you missed Slack screaming in your ear, then by all means, friends. Until next time, Suns fan Conrad and Slack signing out. See you guys later.